This is the daily radio ministry of Pastor Sandy Adams of Calvary Chapel Stone Mountain in Atlanta, Georgia. Pastor Sandy is currently teaching through the book of 1 Samuel. Now here's Pastor Sandy as he teaches through the book of 1 Samuel, chapters 19 through 22.
That anyone would mistake the depth of friendship and the emotion shared between David and Jonathan, if anyone would ever imagine that as some kind of perverted attachment, to me, it's an indictment against the shallowness of most male friendships today. You know, men tend to act macho. Sometimes we guys assume that repressing, not expressing emotion is a real sign of manhood. A couple of guys getting teary-eyed. Oh man, that must be weird. We got the John Wayne persona. You know, I disagree with that notion, though. Men are human. Men feel as well as think and act. Male emotion does come out at times. It comes out on the battlefield when a brother's wounded. Men get emotional in those circumstances. It comes out on the football field in the midst of celebration. My, oh my, those guys are slapping each other in all kinds of places and jumping on top of each other and all kinds of things. That's appropriate male, you know, expression. I think men can be more expressive at other times as well. I don't think we have to repress our emotions like we do. I think we can be expressive. Don't be confused here. David and Jonathan had a holy, healthy, brotherly, manly love for each other. Their model of friendship here is the depth that we men should strive for in our relationships. Chapter 21. Now David came to Nob to Ahimelech the priest. Evidently, after the Philistines' assault on the tabernacle in Shiloh back in the days of Eli, whatever was left of the tabernacle was moved to the city of Nob. The priesthood now was stationed in Nob. And Ahimelech was afraid when he met David and said to him, "Why are you alone and no one is with you?" Evidently, there were just a few men with David, but compared to the company that most celebrities traveled with, David was alone. You know, a superstar like David would ride into town with his posse, you know. The limo would pull up and the whole gang would get out, you know, and they'd all be coming up. So David said to Ahimelech the priest, "The king has ordered me on some business and said to me, 'Do not let anyone know anything about the business on which I send you or what I have commanded you.'" And obviously he's lying here. "And I have directed my young men to such and such a place. I sent them on ahead. Now therefore, what have you on hand? Give me 5 loaves and bread in my hand, or whatever can be found." David and the few men that were with him were on the run. It had been a while since they'd eaten. They needed some food. They're getting hungry. In fact, they're famished. And the priest answered David and said, "There is no common bread on hand, but there is holy bread." And the bread he's referencing here is the sacred showbread. You remember that when we studied it from Leviticus. They were the 12 loaves that were placed in the tabernacle that were only eaten by the priest. The showbread spoke of fellowship with God. This is what made them so holy and sacred. The word showbread literally means bread of faces. And it conjures up the idea of eating with God across the table, face to face with Him. F.B. Meyer refers to the showbread as the presence bread. Only the priest ate this bread. But Ahimelech is about to make an exception. Now, then David answered the priest and said, and of course, what Ahimelech, he's about to make an exception, but notice what he had said earlier. Then David answered the priest. He asked if the women had been kept from him. You see that? Everybody see that? He asked if any women had been kept from him. And he asked, why in the world is he concerned about that? Well, remember again, we learned from Leviticus that a bodily omission made a man ceremonially unclean. And thus this priest, he's about to violate a basic Jewish tradition by letting David eat the showbread, but at least David needs to have some kind of modicum of protocol and propriety. At least tell me you hadn't been with any women lately. And David answers the priest and he says, truly women have been kept from us about 3 days since I came out. And the vessels of the young men are holy and the bread is in effect common, even though it was sacrificed in the vessel this day. So the priest gave him holy bread, for there was no bread there but the showbread which had been taken from before the Lord in order to put hot bread in its place on the day when it was taken away. The sacred showbread was always fresh. The fact David says this is common bread means that it had been taken off of the altar. New bread had been put in its place. And David wants to eat this showbread. Now, it's interesting that in Matthew chapter 12, Jesus uses David's example, right here in our text, 1 Samuel 21, to refute the legalistic Pharisees. They're accusing Jesus of violating the law by allowing his disciples to pluck grain and eat the grain on the Sabbath day. And Jesus answers them in Matthew chapter 12. Have you not read? And he's referring to our text right here in 1 Samuel 21. What David did when he was hungry, he and those who were with him, how he entered the house of God and ate the showbread, which was not lawful for him to eat, nor for those who were with him, but only for the priests. And in the same passage, Jesus quotes Hosea 6:6, which says, I desire mercy and not sacrifice. And here Jesus is making an incredible point. It was never God's intention to put religious ritual above human need. The law was given to help mankind, not hurt him. And when the letter of the law contradicts the intent of the law, then the spirit of the law takes precedent. Here you've got hungry men. Here you've got men that are famished. Here you've got God's chosen one who's to be king of Israel on the run from an angry man. He needs food. Are we going to let some kind of religious ritual stop David from eating this needed bread and fortifying his body for the challenges ahead? Of course not. It's obviously God's will to feed a hungry person versus to support some kind of religious ritual. Feeding a hungry man is always more holy than lighting a candle or burning incense or paying a tithe. Feeding hungry people, meeting human needs is God's heart. Now, a certain man of the servants of Saul was there that day, detained before the Lord. Take note of this. We're going to run into this guy later. And his name was Doeg, an Edomite, the chief of the herdsmen who belonged to Saul. It turns out Doeg will act as a spy for King Saul. He's going to rat out David later. And David said to Ahimelech, is there not here on hand a spear or a sword? For I have brought neither my sword nor my weapons with me because the king's business required haste. So the priest said, the sword of Goliath, the Philistine, whom you killed in the valley of Elah, there it is, wrapped in a cloth behind the ephod. If you will take that, take it, for there is no other except that one here. And David said, oh, there is none like it. Give it to me. And you wonder if he didn't pick it up and sort of roll the grip around in his hand and take a couple of swings again, you know, and remember how he chopped off Goliath's head with it and kind of relive that moment all over again where he defended God's glory and defeated the giant. Boy, oh boy, he had that sword back in his hand. You know, the priest was probably holding on to it as a keepsake. Maybe he planned to put it up for sale at the big Jerusalem memorabilia auction. But I think here's the point. Please, don't turn weapons into keepsakes. You know, the only keepsakes you and I need to be concerned about are heavenly treasures. Those are the only keepsakes we need to be holding on to. All that God gives us on earth needs to be used. It needs to be used for God's glory and for others' benefit. Verse 10. Well, then David arose and he fled that day from before Saul and went to Achish, the king of Gath. And it was probably not a great idea to wear Goliath's sword down Main Street in Goliath's hometown. Gath was where Goliath was from. That's what David does. And the servants of Achish said to him, "Is this not David, the king of the land? Did they not sing of him to one another in dances, saying, 'Saul has slain his thousands, and David his 10,000s?'" Now, why David flees into the land of the Philistines, his mortal enemies, we're not sure. Especially to Goliath's hometown. Maybe David had thought that the Philistines had forgotten him. David might have figured that enemy territory would be the only place that Saul wouldn't be willing to chase him. He might have thought that would be the only place he would be safe from Saul's fury, would be behind Philistine borders. Verse 12, "Now David took these words to heart and was very much afraid of Achish, the king of Gath. And so he changed his behavior before them, feigned madness in their hearts." He could have acted like Saul. "Scratched on the doors of the gate and let his saliva fall down his beard." David goes animalistic. He starts acting like a madman. He starts foaming at the mouth. I thought about bringing a Diet Coke and a Memento. Do you know about this? That if you drop a Memento, that little candy, into a Diet Coke, I mean, it explodes. It'll shoot up from the bottle probably 4 or 5 feet. I'm just thinking David probably swallowed some Diet Coke and stuck a Memento in his mouth. You know, and he was foaming at the mouth and foam was rolling down his face, and he starts scratching at the doors, acting real animalistic and acting like a madman, a crazy man. You figure that's what happened? Whatever he did, it worked. "For then Achish said to his servants, 'Look, you see the man is insane. Why have you brought him to me? I got enough crazy people in Gath. Get rid of this guy. Have I need of madmen that you have brought this fellow to play the madman in my presence? Shall this fellow come into my house? Get him out of my sight.'" And David's scheme succeeds. And it's interesting. There are two psalms. Read them tonight when you go home. Psalm 34 and Psalm 56 that are written in the aftermath of this episode. Both of them are ascribed to this period of time when David feigned madness in Gath. And both, interestingly enough, extol God's greatness and his willingness to deliver us in times of trouble. In fact, listen to David as he reflects back on this experience. Psalm 34, verses 17 through 19. "The righteous cry out, and the Lord hears and delivers them out of all their troubles. The Lord is near to those who have a broken heart, and save such as have a contrite spirit. Many are the afflictions of the righteous, but the Lord delivers him out of them all." And now you know what he was talking about. Chapter 22, David attracts a crowd. "David therefore departed from there and escaped to the cave of Adullam. And when his brothers and all his father's house heard it, they went down there to him, and everyone who was in distress, everyone who was in debt, and everyone who was discontented gathered to him." Boy, he attracted some riffraff. "And so he became captain over them, and there were about 400 men with him." Now, the cave of Adullam was a stronghold in the valley of Elah. Remember what happened in the Valley of Elah? That was the site where David slew Goliath. David goes down there. He finds this cave. And there he is joined by various people, 400 men. This becomes David's camp. This is one of his hideouts in Israel. And what a motley crew he attracts. He's joined by this bunch of misfits, the distressed, the debtors, the discontented. Sounds like Calvary Chapel. This is also what will happen later to a son of David named Jesus, the Messiah. When Jesus comes to earth, he reaches out in love and he accepts the down and out and he attracts the misfits, you and me. Jesus was followed by the outcasts and the disenfranchised of society. And Jesus brings rest to the distressed. He forgives the debtor and makes him heir to his riches. and he gives peace and deep down satisfaction to the discontented. You and I are among Jesus's 400 men. We've joined Jesus's posse. We've become Jesus's mighty men and women. Jesus has given us a fresh start and a new identity. And then David went from there to Mizpah of Moab. Moab, of course, was east of the Dead Sea. And he said to the king of Moab, "Please let my father and mother come here with you till I know what God will do for me." He's seeking refuge for his family. You know, David was worried that Saul might try to harm his family to get to him. Saul would have been fully capable of kidnapping and extortion. And David hopes that Moab will provide his family some political asylum. He hopes the Moabites will provide a safe house for David's mother and father. You recall David had some Moabite blood. His great-grandmother was a Moabitess. You remember her name? Ruth. You're good. And so he brought them before the king of Moab, and they dwelt with him all the time that David was in the stronghold. Then the prophet Gad said to David, "Do not stay in the stronghold. Depart and go to the land of Judah." In other words, David, you need to go further south. You need to get out of Dodge here. So David departed and went into the forest of Hereth. Verse 6, "Then Saul heard that David and the men who were with him had been discovered. Now Saul was staying in Gibeah under a tamarisk tree in Ramah with his spear in his hand and all his servants." Man, he always had his spear in his hand. "And all his servants standing about him. Then Saul said to his servants who stood about him, 'Hear now, you Benjamites, will the son of Jesse give every one of you fields and vineyards and make you all captains of thousands and captains of hundreds?'" And I imagine Saul's worried about some of his men defecting and going over to David. He's saying, "I'm the king, not David. I'm the one who can reward you. I'm the one who can promote you. Stay and fight with me. All of you have conspired against me, and there is no one who reveals me." And this is how paranoid he is. He thinks everybody's turned against him. "And there is no one who reveals to me that my son has made a covenant with the son of Jesse. And there is no one of you who is sorry for me. Oh, poor, pitiful Saul. Or reveals to me that my son has stirred up my servant against me to lie in wait as it is this day." Saul is sulking again. He's having a big pity party here. He feels Jonathan has betrayed him. Everyone has sided against him and sided for his son in David. And then answered Doeg the Edomite. You remember Doeg? Where was he? He was at the tabernacle back in Nob. Remember? He saw that whole thing that went on between Ahimelech and David. "Then answered Doeg the Edomite, who was set over the servants of Saul, and said, 'I saw the son of Jesse going to Nob, to Ahimelech the son of Ahitub. And he inquired of the Lord for him, gave him provisions, and gave him the sword of Goliath the Philistine.'" He rats out Ahimelech. "And so the king sent to call Ahimelech the priest, the son of Ahitub, and all his father's house, the priests who were in Nob, and they all came to the king. And Saul said, 'Hear now, son of Ahitub.' And he answered, 'Here I am, my lord.' Then Saul said to him, 'Why have you conspired against me, you and the son of Jesse, in that you have given him bread and a sword and have inquired of God for him that he should rise against me to lie in wait as it is this day?' And so Ahimelech answered the king and said, 'And who among all your servants is as faithful as David, who is the king's son-in-law, who goes at your bidding and is honorable in your house?'" This doesn't make sense. I mean, "David came to me, said he was on a mission for you. He served you faithfully. Why are you angry at him?" He continues, verse 15, "Did I then begin to inquire of God for him? Far be it from me. Let not the king impute anything to his servant or to any in the house of my father. For your servant knew nothing of all this, little or much." And the king said, "You shall surely die, Ahimelech, you and all your father's house." Then the king said to the guards who stood about him, "Turn and kill the priests of the Lord, because their hand also is with David, and because they knew when he fled and did not tell it to me." And again, Saul issues one of these rash orders. But the servants of the king would not lift their hands to strike the priests of the Lord. They feared God far more than they feared Saul. And the king said to Doeg, "You turn and kill the priests." And this dog, Doeg, was the only man in the crowd that day evil enough to do the dirty deed. And so he takes a sword and he does Saul's dirty work. And so Doeg the Edomite turned and he struck the priests. And he killed on that day 85 men who wore a linen ephod. It was the smock. The ephod was the smock worn by the priests. Also Nob, the city of the priests, he struck with the edge of the sword, both men and women, children and nursing infants, oxen and donkeys and sheep with the edge of the sword. Doeg carries out Saul's bloodthirsty wishes. Verse 20, now one of the sons of Ahimelech, the son of Ahitub, named Abiathar, escaped and fled after David. And Abiathar told David that Saul had killed the Lord's priests. And can you imagine him coming up to David and weeping and crying? And David, you'll just never, you can't believe what he did. And spilling out the beans, you know, and telling him the story. And so David said to Abiathar, I knew that day when Doeg the Edomite was there that he would surely tell Saul. You know, I had a feeling about that guy. I have caused the death of all the persons of your father's house. And I want you to notice this. Notice David's tender, humble, repentant heart. He could have, perhaps he should have, blamed Saul's rage, blamed Doeg's diabolical self-seeking for this disaster. Instead, notice, David holds himself responsible. If David hadn't pretended to be on a royal mission, of course, if Ahimelech had known the truth, he probably would have been even more inclined to help David. But David's first impulse here is to search his own heart rather than blame someone else, to search his own heart. And here is the mark of a true leader. Here is why God selected David to be king. When calamity struck, rather than to blame other people, he searched his own heart. That's a mark of a true leader. That's a man after God's own heart. I'm not going to blame somebody else. I'm going to search my own heart. What role did I play in this? How was I party to this problem? I may have played just a little part. But let me take responsibility for myself first. Ahimelech's son Abiathar is the sole survivor, his only heir. And David will pay his debt to the parish priest Ahimelech by ensuring the safety of his son Abiathar. And in the last line of chapter 22, David promises Abiathar, stay with me, do not fear, for he who seeks my life seeks your life, but with me you shall be safe. And let me close tonight with some important typology. There's a picture here you need to see. David is king, but he's yet to take the throne. He's God's anointed, but another man sits on the throne named Saul. In the meantime, David is gathering up society's rejects. He and his followers are the objects of persecution. Saul, this usurper, sits on the throne, and he is venting his rage at David and his merry men. And understand, it's all a picture of our King Jesus. For though Jesus is the anointed one, though Jesus has been chosen by God to be the king of this earth, right now, Saul still sits on the throne. The devil is the usurper. And what is the devil doing in these last days? He's persecuting Jesus and his followers. And while Jesus gathers up all of us distressed and discontented and indebted, Saul, Satan, is angry at what Jesus is doing in the world today, how he's saving lives, how he's changing hearts. But one day, Jesus will take the throne. He will rule over this earth. Saul and Satan will be disposed. They'll be judged, and the followers of Jesus will reign and rule with him. What a day that will be. And what a wonderful picture.
We are so glad you joined us today as Pastor Sandy teaches through 1 Samuel. As we go through this book, we get to see all the ways that God's plans seldom follow human patterns. He chooses Hannah, who is barren, to be the mother of Samuel, and Samuel becomes the prophet of God instead of the sons of the priest. Later on, God chooses David, the youngest and least likely of the sons, to be king. In 1 Samuel 16, we discover the reason behind God's purposes when he says, "Man looks on the outward appearance, but the Lord looks on the heart." It doesn't matter who you are or what position you hold. God is able to see your heart. He will use you for his purposes if you will open your heart to him. If you have prayer needs as you go through this journey, we'd like to be the ones praying with you. Give us a call at 770-736-2828. Once again, that's 770-736-2828. We'd also love to connect with you on Facebook or Twitter. Or for those of you who live in the Atlanta, Georgia area, Pastor Sandy would love to meet you and shake your hand at Calvary Chapel Stone Mountain. We gather weekly to praise God, study His Word, and get to know one another. You can find directions and service times at our website, sandyadams.org. We're all out of time for today, but we hope you join us again next time as Pastor Sandy continues teaching through 1 Samuel.